Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you a thousand times for keeping us on the air, but with your donations and your sacrifices, it's a lot of money is hard to come by nowadays. We just had a fabulous hour, and I'd like to take my hat off to not just Jason, but Gene. He asked some of the best questions. I mean, just laser focused questions. I wish I could do that. I'm too scatterbrained. But that's why when I got this inspiration to start Blood River, I told people, I'm this isn't false modesty because I don't have nothing to be proud of hardly. Because I said, I know I'm not a scholar. I know I don't have any special talent, but I do know this. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to get the message out. I want to fight global white genocide, which is ongoing right now. I knew that for sure. I remember telling CW about that up at the Deer Camp. I said, I've got to start this radio program. We got to do something because Simon Roach was still fresh in my mind. The hell that was going on in South Africa, how white people in South Africa were being exterminated. And I remember we talked to Simon. He said several times, he said, Eddie and Gene, all of us, talking to all of us, all the signs I saw in South Africa before it hit the fan, before it got really bad, he said they're already in place in the United States. He said it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And he said not long ago that we were in worse shape, Gene, now than they are at this current time. But I decided then I wanted to get the best people I could get on the program with it. I don't have to have the talent. All I got to do is get the people with the talent they're the ones. They can the people. We go in this program here to supply a platform to people who do have skill. And Gene is the best historian I've ever seen. He's got I don't know how in the hell he remembers all that. But we have people like Gene. We have people like Monica. We have people like that. And Jason Kessler to get the story out. And I'll tell you one thing else before we go to Confederate history. Nothing is more important to Blood River Radio than Confederate History Hour. It'll always be that way as long as we have a Blood River Radio because, you know what, there's no other program I know of that gives the true history. It's blood and soil what Gene Andrews does when he comes in here every week and tells, our ancestors, we have people in the ground, thousands of people, your great-grandfathers that died trying to preserve Southern independence, trying to beat back a demon-possessed Yankee government and Gene, I've got to shut the hell up a minute, but I'm really passionate about this. I thank God Gene comes in here and does it. And I hope our young people can take this to heart and say, hey, I don't have to hate myself after all just for being white. You know, I do have ancestors that were great. I had ancestors that went barefooted, that had their feet and their blood from their feet in the snow and rocks because they had no shoes. They still wouldn't give up. We're going to continue to do that, but anyway, I pretty appreciate you coming on, Gene, and man, you're just doing one hell of a service here. You did a really good job in that second hour, too. You got great questions. But anyway, Bill Rimmer, go ahead and take it away, brother.
I hope people will get Jason's book. I think that would educate a lot of people and find out what went on, the promises that that slimy mayor of Charlottesville made and that worthless darky police chief, affirmative action police chief. And that's what happens all over the country. They put these DEI people in positions of authority and they just totally screw it up. And they're now Trump and Elon Musk are going through there and cleaning them all out. But, you know, if Mr. Trump serves four or five terms, I don't think he could get all the garbage out of our federal government. And then Charlottesville and J6 were just two huge examples of how rotten to the core the federal government is, and even the state governments and local governments that set these things up to discredit people. And they're such cowards. This is the way they operate. They stab you in the back. They say you're going to have security. They don't have it. They say you can go to the Capitol, and then undercover agents for the FBI were tearing down the barricades and actually leading people, pushing people into the Capitol. So these setup things like this are examples of how rotten and corrupt our government is and how afraid they are of people that get out and actually speak out against the government and what the government's doing. Like in Charlottesville, destroying our history, taking that statue of General Lee down.
Yes.
And Jason Boshiers, who was the national commander of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, offered to take the statue, and the Sons of Confederate Veterans would pay for having it moved and take it and set it up at a place that we owned on private property, Sons of Confederate Veterans owned on private property, and get it out of Charlottesville. They said, no, 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 we want it destroyed. And that's exactly what they did. They chopped it up and had it melted down and destroyed it. So that shows you what our enemies are like. They hate us. They want to destroy not only us, but our history and our heritage. And just like in communism, that's how the communists do it. They tell you your history was bad, and it was terrible, but now if you just embrace communism and the socialist type of government that the communists have, everything will be great. And just forget about the past and your evil ancestors. So we're not going to forget, and we're going to tell the truth, and we're going to show up the government and show what rotten rats they really are. You know, when you turn the lights on, they all go scurrying across the floor and trying to find a hole to duck into. So,
and you know, Gene, just like they hated the statue of General Lee up there in Lee Park, and they hate our anything to do with white history, especially white Christian, especially white Christian Southern culture. They hate that. And you know what? That's why Blood River Radio with Confederate History Hour is a thorn in their ass. It's a thumb in their damn eye of the beast that hates our culture, hates our ancestors, and that's why Confederate History Hour is so very important. Our young people need to listen. I wish we could get all the young people in the school, as many as we could possibly get, to listen to this true history. Like I said, it's okay to be white. Not only is it okay, the white race, the southern white people, especially during the Confederate times, the greatest people that the world has ever produced, them, and I'd say our German army people, the Waffen-SS in the Second World War. But anyway, take it away, Bob. I'll take it away, Bitterender.
Okay, we're going to have, for this week, we're going to have our Confederate Book Club, and we're going to talk about some books along the subject of the War for Southern Independence or conservative ideas, and give some our listeners some ideas of some things they can read and get caught up to speed on this. And the first book we're going to start off with, I'm sure everybody's heard of it before, Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell. And I've got my mother's copy of Gone with the Wind. It was printed in 1938. Whoa. And the book was first published in 1936. Of course, it had come out then. There were 8 reprints in 1936. They couldn't print it fast enough to keep up with the demand for sales. 1937, there were 4 reprints. In 1938, when this book was reprinted, there were 4 reprints then. Margaret Mitchell was quite a historian, because when she was a little girl, there were a lot of the Confederate veterans that were alive, and she used to, I'm sure like my grandmother talked about, sit on the front porch and listen to the veterans talking about stories about the war and things like that. So that's where she got her interest in this time period, and then turning it into a novel about a young lady, Scarlett O'Hara, and what she went through and her family and the hardships they had to face during the war and the starvation and everything she had to do to pretty much sell her soul just to stay alive after the war. So the book, it has some pretty good history, and it's a novel, a romantic novel, but it has some really good history. If you read any of the first part of the chapters during the war period, she gives a pretty good, Margaret Mitchell gives a pretty good summary of the war in Virginia, and then especially when the war came from Dalton, Georgia, down to Atlanta, and then the siege of Atlanta. And there's one question, if she were still alive today, I would love to ask her this. One of the characters in the book was Ashley Wilkes, and Scarlett was so in love with him, yeah, and he was, you know, going to marry Melanie and so forth. And she just had a crush on him all the way through the book until right to the end she found out what a wimp he was and what a spineless character he was. And in the book, he starts out as a captain, and he had 3 bars on his collar. Now, the Confederate Army back then, the officers had the rank on the collar instead of on the shoulders like the U.S. Army did. So he had 3 bars on his collar. He was a captain. He comes home from the war, and he's Major Wilkes. So in 4 years of war, he only got 1 promotion. And he wasn't behind the lines in the rear with the gear at the button-making factory in Valdosta, Georgia, or something like that. He was in Wade Hampton's cavalry. And they were part of Jeb Stuart's cavalry corps in the Army of Northern Virginia. So they were in every battle that the Army of Northern Virginia fought, all the way up to Gettysburg and around Richmond and the raids up to into Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, and things like that. And then, of course, Wade Hampton took over the cavalry after Jeb Stuart had been killed toward the end of the war. But in all of that, in a combat officer's role, he only got one promotion. And if you went in as a captain back then and you survived, you would wind up at least a colonel or probably a brigadier general just because you were alive. And all the other officers that went in as captain had been killed off. So I think she was showing he wasn't as great as Scarlett thought he was.
He must not have been.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you for hanging out. We're going to go right back to the Bitter Ender. I got this question, this comment right here. The Bitter Ender was talking about how in the movie, the book, Gone with the Wind, I think it was Ashley Wilkes. Well, anyway,
yeah.
He was Scarlett O'Hara's. She was in love with him. The Bitter Ender said he went into the war as a captain and only came out in 4 years of hard fighting as a major. And I was going to ask Gene, by any chance, you've been a historian, would you know what the casualty rate was on that that cavalry corps from after 4 years of fighting? I bet they lost 80 or 90% of their men over 4 years.
They lost a lot. And anybody, all the biographies I've read of Confederate officers, if they were in their state militia or early on, if they got commissioned a captain at the early part of the war, if they survived, they probably came out of the war as a brigadier general or at least a colonel. So that would have been, he would have had to gone from captain to major to lieutenant colonel, and then up to brigadier general. Because even if you weren't that great, so many of the officers above you were killed off. And so by the end of the war, they had people, division commanders, that probably started out as just a lieutenant or a captain at the early part of the war. And they had to have replacements because General so-and-so was killed. And then the next person in rank, Colonel so-and-so, stepped up to take over the brigade. And then he got killed. And then here came somebody else up. So it was a tremendous casualty rate that they had. And, of course, back then, you led from the front. You didn't sit back in the rear and send drones or cruise missiles over somewhere to attack the enemy. Excuse me. You were out there on the field, and you had to lead your men, or you came under fire with them. And that was the thing that was most amazing about Bedford Forrest, I think. That I heard one historian said, the most amazing thing about Forrest is he survived the war. Because he not only led from the front, he fought from the front. And, of course, he paid a price. He was shot five times or wounded five times during the war. So, anyway, but we'll get to Forrest in just a minute. So, if you want to get a book that's a great overall history of the war, I would highly recommend Shelby Foote, Memphian, Eddie, from Memphis. And, in fact, I've met him down there one of the Forrest birthday celebrations out there at Forrest Park when we still had General Forrest at Forrest Park. Very quiet person. You wouldn't know him from just some elderly gentleman that just kind of dropped in off the sidewalk, but a super nice fellow. And the book is The Civil War, A Narrative, and it's three volumes. And he laughed about it one time in an interview, said, yeah, it took him longer to write that than it did to fight the whole war. And it's just great. He covers the politics and the military strategy, and he was a novelist, and this was, I think, the first book he wrote that wasn't a novel. But it's so interesting to just pick up any one of those books, and you want to read about Battle of Murfreesboro. You flip over and read that, and then, well, here's something interesting that happened right after there. Well, now here's something interesting here. Well, now look at this. It is just great entertainment and great reading. Even if you don't sit down and read it from page one all the way to page 4,000 or whatever it is at the end of the third book there. So, and he ties it all together. And that's what was so interesting about it, because he's talking about battles out here in the Western Theater. And then he says, and the rainstorm that soaked the Army of Tennessee moved across the mountains and began to pour down on the Yankee Army around Culpeper or something like that. So it's all tied together. So that's a good one. Another one, Robert E. Lee biography by Douglas Southall Freeman. And the Lee biography won a Pulitzer Prize. And that's back when they gave Pulitzer Prizes for exceptional literary work, and not just because it was about transgenders or, you know, the oppressed minorities or something like that. It actually had to have some good information in it.
Give that title one more time. Well, Robert E. Lee, what was the name?
Robert E. Lee, that's just the title. It's a biography of Lee.
Okay.
And it's by Douglas Southall Freeman. And he has written several books about the war and about Virginia. He's from Richmond. And he said that every morning he worked for the Richmond Examiner newspaper, and then was a great author on the side as well. Said every morning when he was driving to the paper, he would be driving down Monument Avenue, and he would salute the Lee statue there on Monument Avenue, which, of course, the feral animals have torn down. Another one that Mr. Freeman wrote is called Lee's Lieutenants, A Study in Command. And it's about all the officers that served in the Army of Northern Virginia and how they came and rated them on how good they were commanding their division or the corps or whatever. And it really gives a breakdown of all the battles and what happened, why they won, why they lost, and where there was a command failure in the Army and where Lee's plans weren't followed or happenstance or circumstance turned the tide of the battle either for or against the Army of Northern Virginia. And when I was in the Marine Corps, it was recommended by officers in the Marine Corps to read Lee's Lieutenants, A Study in Command by Douglas Southall Freeman, because it gives you an idea of who good commanders were and why they were good commanders, and then why others failed under the stress of combat. Now, of course, my hero was a fellow Tennessean, Nathan Bedford Forrest. That's not a surprise to our listeners.
No.
And there's several books about Forrest that you could get a lot of information on him. Probably the most quoted and the one that they go to the most was by Dr. John Wythe. It's called That Devil Forrest, and that came from a quote by Sherman. Forrest had just knocked out the Yankee supply depot at Johnsonville, and Sherman was cussing about Forrest and said, that devil Forrest is down there among the gunboats and tearing up the supply line. So Sherman referred to him as That Devil Forrest. Another one on Forrest is called The Campaigns of Nathan Bedford Forrest by Jordan and Pryor. And this is the only book that was written while Forrest was still alive. And he proofread it and made some corrections or added some things to it. It's kind of a hard read. It's written that old style where they're very flowery and very descriptive and things like that. But it's still, if you want to get actual facts and details, Forrest did read this, read the proofs of it, and made the suggestions on it. Another one, this is one that we sell at the Forrest home. It's not a real thick book. It's called Life and Times of Bedford Forrest, and it's by Steve Ford. And he's an artist, and he's got illustrations on every single page of that book, and there's not a lot of detail. You know, it's not a real thick book, and you get involved in what this company did and where they moved to this point in the field, and then they turned around and marched back over here across this road, all that sort of stuff. It's just a brief sketch of Forrest's early life, the war, and then post-war. And Steve did all the illustrations in it. And I tell you what, some of those illustrations look like photographs. He is quite an artist. And another thing that I would recommend this book for, it's just somebody that's starting out and just wants to get a brief overview of Forrest's life. But one of the things I always recommend it to people that come to the Forrest home, this is one of the best books I've ever seen for maps of Forrest campaigns and battles that he fought in. Then another one, it was written by Robert Self Henry. It's called First with the Most Forrest. And it's one that he explains in the introduction to the book. Excuse me, I think I'm caught your cold over the phone, Eddie. Anyway, he explains that Forrest never said, I got there firstest with the mostest. And there were three different times where he gave the quote, which was, never stand to receive the attack of the enemy. Always take the initiative and get there first with the most men. And there was even a federal officer that they had captured, and he gave that quote, that he had talked to Forrest, and he was interested in talking with Forrest, and you know, how are you so good? How can we never catch up to you and never defeat you on the battlefield? And Forrest gave him that quote. He said, I never stand to receive the attack of the enemy. He said, always take the initiative and get there first with the most men. But Mr. Henry in his book said, it's been misquoted so many times that I doubt that we'll ever hear the lastest of that quote. So another good book on Forrest, Military Campaigns of Forrest by John Scales, retired Brigadier General. That's really a good one because he gives a lot of information there on how to trace the battlefields where Forrest fought. And said, well, you take State Route 38 to this point, and then you have to take County Road number 116, and that'll put you at the hill where Morton's artillery was. So that's an interesting book. Now, if you're interested in the Western theater of the war, the battles that were fought west of the Appalachian Mountain chain, there were several good books on that. One of them was written back in the 1940s. It's called The Army of Tennessee by Stanley Horn. And it tells about all the battles that the army out here fought in. You know, of course, Virginia got all the publicity, and you know, they won a lot more battles than the poor old Army of Tennessee did, and basically just had one commander, Robert E. Lee, throughout the majority of the period of the war. But they changed commanders out here all too often, and it never got a really cohesive command structure. Albert Sidney Johnston got killed at Shiloh, and then Braxton Bragg took over, and he squandered more opportunities than you can think of. And then Joseph E. Johnston was not one of President Davis's favorites, and when Johnston wouldn't tell Davis if he was going to defend Atlanta, if he was going to pull out, Davis yanked him out and put John Bell Hood in there. They wanted somebody that was aggressive, and Hood was aggressive, all right. And he fought three major battles around Atlanta and just butchered the Army of Tennessee, of course, when they got into Tennessee at Franklin and then Nashville. So that's a good one. If you want to find out what happened in another theater of the war, the Western theater, Army of Tennessee by Stanley Horn. And we'll cover some more of our books after the break.
Yes, sir. This is great stuff, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Pentagon deploying 3,000 more active duty troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has ordered elements of the Stryker Brigade Combat Team and a General Support Aviation Battalion for that mission. Forces will arrive along the border in the coming 2 to 3 weeks. Majority of voters favor an election integrity measure recently advocated by President Trump.
The survey of 1,210 U.S. likely voters was conducted on February 24th and 26th by Rasmussen Reports. The margin of sampling error is plus or minus 3 percentage points with a 95% level of confidence. The Rasmussen Report's daily presidential tracking poll for Friday shows that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance, 48% disapprove. The latest figures include 35% who strongly approve of the job President Trump is doing and 40% who strongly disapprove. That gives him a presidential approval index rating of -5. Bernie Bennett reporting.
Also at townhall.com, a week-long diplomatic effort to help end Russia's war in Ukraine crashing down on the Oval Office. Here's White House correspondent Greg Clugston.
After White House visits by two key European allies, President Trump said he looked forward to Friday's meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky.
We're going to get along really well. Okay. We have a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for him.
But tensions ran high during that Oval Office meeting.
Can I
wait a minute?
Sir?
No, no. You've done a lot of talking. Your country is in big trouble.
I know.
You're not winning.
I know.
You're not winning this.
The diplomatic breakdown leaves many unanswered questions about how to end Russia's war in Ukraine and the global repercussions. Greg Clugston, Washington.
There is a lot of controversy right now in the Big Apple. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he is running for mayor of New York City. More on these stories at townhall.com.
You hear the term living better. What do you think about? More money, a bigger house, maybe a yacht? What about how you feel physically? How do you wake up each day? How do you sleep during the night? What activities you can and cannot do? When you feel good, life is good. So if pain is affecting your life, see how Relief Factor can help. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally, developed by doctors. It doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or even eliminate pain. How do I know? Absolutely, am a customer. I take Relief Factor daily. No lower back pain for me anymore. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Give their 3-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Just one phone call, 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor, relief wherever you're hurting, in 3 weeks or even days. Relief Factor can give you a chance to rediscover the true meaning of living better again. Visit ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF for the one and only Relief Factor.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, I tell you what, I'm having a really good time tonight listening to these book reviews, just like the old Sasquatch down there in the swamps. I'm really enjoying this. I'd like to have a snort of what he's got. He's got him a little snort. And got him a stogie, but it looks like a billy club. It looks so big. But anyway, let's go back to you. I had asked you a question.
Fire away.
During the break, you know, as I said, Albert Sidney Johnson, the Confederate general who was killed at Shiloh, and you said during the break that Beauregard was his second in command, and took Beauregard a lot of time in that day. He had to waste a lot of time trying to figure out where this battalion was, where that battalion was. It looks like, in retrospect, of course, it's easy to me to be an armchair quarterback. It looks like that Johnson would have had two or three of his backups since the casualty rates were so high. Go ahead, Gene.
No. You're right, Eddie. And we'd look back at it and say now, well, who is his second command? He should have just moved right up. But there's one thing that Johnson messed up on. When they launched this attack against Grant, and it caught Grant completely by surprise, they thought the Confederate Army was down in Corinth, Mississippi. And Johnston and the Confederates had marched up to Pittsburgh Landing. They were right up just outside of Grant's lines, and Grant did not know that an army of 40,000 was just a few yards away from his pickets and his front lines, ready to launch an attack at dawn the next morning. So Grant was caught by surprise, and there were even Confederates. It had rained on them marching up from Corinth. There were even Confederates that fired their rifles in the night out in the woods to see if the powder was still dry. And they sent out scouts, and they said, what's all that? And they said, oh, I don't know. That's just somebody out there shooting or something like that. So they've got an army of 40,000 that launched an attack at dawn. They overran the federal camps. A lot of the Confederates hadn't eaten in two or three days. They stopped to eat what the Yankees were fixing for breakfast. But here's the problem, though, of what you were talking about. Johnston really had a very poor battle plan. He had, say, Beauregard's corps spread out from the Tennessee River 8 or 9 miles west through the woods on a solid line from right to left. And then the next person, Bragg, same thing, the next line back. Were they from the Tennessee River through the woods, 8 or 9 miles, maybe not that far, let's say 5 miles, out through the woods from the east to the west. And then Breckinridge's corps, and we're all spread out in a single line all the way across there. So if you had a breakdown up in front of you, you got Beauregard's corps got stalled, he couldn't go back, you know, 2 or 3 miles away and have part of his divisions or corps brought over to help out. When you launch an attack, say you had 3 divisions in your corps, you'd have 2 divisions up front and 1 right behind you. And then if one of those divisions got stalled, all you had to do is just send back 200 yards or so and say, okay, tell so-and-so to bring his division up. We're right here. And then the next line that was coming through, they would do the same thing on your flank over to the left. They would have 2 divisions up attacking and 1 in reserve right behind them and so forth. But when you spread that line out for 5 or 6 miles, how are you going to get command from all the way to the Tennessee River over 4 or 5 miles into the woods?
True.
You have no command, you know, instead of just sending orderlies or your officers back and say, okay, bring up that 3rd division right now. Get them up here. And they're right behind you. And then you continue the attack. So that was a bad situation. So once he went down, then, and they've, you know, you've been to the battlefield at Shiloh. It's all in woods and ravines and creeks and everything like that. It's a tangled mess. And they always say that your battle plan flies out the window as soon as the first shot's fired. So no matter what your plan is, you have to be able to adjust on the field. And so once they got tangled up in those woods and they overran Yankee positions, and some of the Confederates were behind the Yankee camps and some were charging into them, and this unit got in front of this one and cut them off, and they're waiting for them to get out of the way so they can go. And the whole plan was to drive Grant's army away from the river and back along one of the creeks and pin them back in the woods. As the attack unfolded, instead of driving them away from the river and Pittsburgh Landing, the Confederate army swung from right to left and drove Grant's army. Yeah, they drove them off the field, but they drove them right back to the river at Pittsburgh Landing, where they had the high ground and they could get reinforcements that night. Exactly. So, see, you could have commanded the army. You knew what to do.
So, got a hole for you.
our hole for the officer. We talked about. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What'd you say?
Oh, I was going to say, I was just a peon, spec five. Hell, you were the officer. I had a call. I said, well, where's G? Where the hell? What do I do now? Run!
He's trying to find his contact lens. He lost in the woods somewhere. He can't see where he's going. We're talking about the Western Theater of the War. That's from the Appalachian Mountains over to the Mississippi River. And we talked about the Army of Tennessee. Great history of the Army of Tennessee by Stanley Horn. There was another one that came out later in the 80s, I believe, as by Thomas Connelly. In fact, it was two books. It's called The Army of the Heartland, one book. And then the latter book that covered the latter part of the war out here was called Autumn of Glory. So if you want to find out something about the other army, not just the Army of Northern Virginia, I'd recommend one of those two right there. We're going on talking about Forrest, and one of the ones that's come out recently that I think is a great one, it's called Bust Hell Wide Open, and that's by Dr. Yeah. Samuel Mitchum. And that's that Forrest quote at Fort Donelson when they said they were going to surrender. He said, I didn't bring my men here to surrender. We're going out of here tonight, even if we have to bust hell wide open. So that's where he got the quote. And Dr. Mitchum, in the introduction to the book, has a thing in there about Forrest. He said, in the Western Theater of the War, which is what we're talking about, and that's where Forrest fought. He never fought in Virginia under Lee or in the Carolinas or anything like that. All his battles were Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama. So he said, in the Western Theater of the War, the professionally trained West Point generals hardly ever won, while Forrest, the amateur, hardly ever lost, but they wouldn't listen to him. Some other books that would give you an accurate account of history. During Reconstruction and the horrors that the South had to go through for 12 years of Reconstruction, and now they tell you, the Southerners were terrible because they didn't want blacks to vote, and, they were so bad, and they didn't want to accept blacks as equals and all of this. Now, these books tell you what really happened to the Southerners during Reconstruction, about they couldn't vote, they had land stolen away from them, they were starving, the people were attacked. And if you want to get a real idea of what it was like, the book I would recommend is called The Tragic Era by Claude Bowers. And it says that the subtitle was, it was The Tragic Era, The Revolution After Lincoln, and what happened to the government, not only in the South, but in D.C. And this was published in 1929. So back then, they used to publish accurate history, not the made-up junk that we have today. Another one that came along during that time period, an accurate history of the Ku Klux Klan, is called The Invisible Empire by Stanley Horn. And an introduction in that book, when the Ku Klux Klan committee met in Washington investigating what was going on in the South, and this it wasn't just the Klan. There were other vigilante groups that had to protect Southerners and especially protect the women from being attacked by all these blacks in Yankee Army uniforms. So the Klan committee met in Washington in Congress, and one of the committee members wrote a report and said that summed it up, and he said, evil government produces evil citizens. And so he was blaming the federal government for what was happening in the South. Now, those pretty much refer back to the war and incidents in the war and so forth. The next group we're going to talk about, I call them the Southern Defenders. And these are the modern books that were written by people to defend the South and set the record straight. One of them is called The South Was Right by Donnie and Ronnie Kennedy. And it refutes all the anti-South lies, and it really gives you a lowdown on Lincoln and what a dishonest dictator he was during the war. And Lincoln is held up, you know, as some kind of saint, our greatest president, and all he and what he did to actually even admitted he needed a war and he needed to force the South to fire the first shot. And he wasn't about freeing the slaves. He wanted the money that the South was paying in tariffs for all the imported goods that were coming in from Europe. And we were selling cotton and then buying from Europeans. And so Lincoln wanted to protect the industrialists in the Northeast and slap high tariffs. They're talking about how terrible Trump is putting a 25% tariff on items coming in from Mexico and Canada and 10% on China. The Morrell tariff that was passed by the Yankee government to cut off money, the Southern trade with Europe, it was a 40% tariff. So they have that in the book. Another book the Kennedy brothers wrote, and they emphasize they're the Kennedy brothers from Louisiana, not the Kennedys from Massachusetts. We'll come back right after the break and finish up a few more of these modern books.
Yeah, I got one quick question. We'll come back. So be right back, folks.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, there's never enough time, but I was asking the professor during the break, are there any books on some of these ministers that were on the staff? And I'd heard one of our friends, Henry Jones, he was a big admirer of this, I think it was H.L. Dabney, but he was a minister, and he was on the staff. Go ahead, Gene, take over that. Ministers.
Robert Louis Dabney, D-A-B-N-E-Y. And he was on Stonewall Jackson's staff, and he was a minister. And he wrote a biography of Jackson, and I had a copy of that. It was published in 1866, and he was still bitter about the war. And he didn't refer to the Yankee Army as the Federals or the Union Army or the Army of the Potomac or anything. It's in the book. It says the enemy did this, and the enemy did that, and the enemy, you know, raped and murdered their way across Virginia and destroyed the Shenandoah Valley. He was
we're still bitter too, ain't we, Gene?
Yeah.
We're still bitter.
Didn't get the name Bitter Ender for nothing.
Got that right.
So yeah, Dabney was. And one thing we were talking about during the break, he taught, was headmaster or president of a seminary school after the war, and I'll have to look it up where it was. But one of the things he told the graduating class of people that were being trained for the ministry, he said, you have no reason to be ashamed of your Confederate ancestors, and don't you ever do anything to make them ashamed of you. So he was pretty well laying it out about respect to what your ancestors did during the war. Another one, book by the Kennedys, was Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxist, and how Lincoln and Karl Marx were pretty much tied together. Karl Marx wrote several, more than several, many editorials in Horace Greeley's New York World newspaper praising Lincoln and saying that he needed to be a dictator. And that's the only way that communism was going to take over, was to have a dictator in charge of the country.
Give me the name of that book one more time, Gene. That'd be a dynamite read.
Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxist.
Okay, I got you. Thank you, Gene.
Yeah, by Donnie and Ronnie Kennedy. Another one that is a good Southern book to read and get your facts straight and be able to refute a lot of the Yankee lies and so forth is Southern by the Grace of God by Michael Grissom. And it's sort of a primer for Southern history and Southern heritage, and he goes into a lot about our heritage. And there are short biographical sketches in that book and the photographs of Lee and Davis, Sam Davis, President Davis and Sam Davis, the boy hero of the Confederacy that was murdered by the Federals down here at Pulaski, Tennessee, in Forrest. And a lot of the Confederates' biographies are in there. Another book that Mike has just come out with recently is called The Southern Book of Quotes by Michael Grissom. And it's great. In the introduction, he says, if you go to Bartlett's famous quotations, it's all about Yankees. Everything from the Northeast, Longfellow and Thoreau, and, of course, Lincoln in there. Maybe only one or two quotes about Southerners. But this Southern Book of Quotes, it's all Southern. And it's arranged chronologically from the Constitution and what they said at the Constitutional Convention and up through the war, quotes from Lee and Jackson and Davis and Patrick Claiborne, Bedford Forrest. And then it brings on up to modern times. You got quotes from Will Rogers, Elvis, Minnie Pearl. And then all those names are listed alphabetically. So if you want to hear or read what Lee actually said and not what they tell you on TV, turn to R.E. Lee and the L's, and it starts on page 137 and goes through page 145. And so that's really good if you need to look up something like that.
Gee, we still have a few of those books on hand here at Blood River.
And, okay.
You know what? We still have a few. And I don't remember. I swear to God, I can never remember to plug them. We have some. We also have some book, The Dark Alliance, written by Jason Robb. So what were? I feel like a dumbass. I forgot how much we were selling them for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we sell those for $20 at the Forest Home, so maybe that would help you out on what you're selling them for. So
I got you. Anyway. I got you. So if anybody wants to send them, if you want a copy from the Forest Home, you can get it through Gene. We have some left over here. A donation of – how much should they donate, Gene?
Well, and we, like I said, we sell them for $20 at the Forest Home. That covers our cost of the book and makes a little bit for the Forest Home. So,
whatever you think
you would be a fair price to our listeners. So.
Well, folks, just if you want a book, send us a get in touch with Gene, get in touch with me. We'll get you one, and any money you give will cover the cost, and also it will support the Forest Home and or Blood River. If you want to get one, you can go into Blood River Radio, Eddie at BloodRiverRadio.com, or Gene, tell them how they can go through the Forest Home and get it.
Well, they could send it to my address, and I could mail it to them in Nashville. And we've got that on the Blood River website, so we can get that or call and give me their address, and I can send it to them.
Folks, if you want one, you'd help us greatly. Every penny. Plus, you would get I guarantee double damn to you, you would like to read it, because that's one of the few books I've read. They're really great. But not to take up any more of your time, Bader Ender, go ahead.
Another book I'd like to highly recommend, this is written by Charles Adams, who was a Northerner. And he was getting ready to write the obligatory book about slavery and everything. And when he started researching, he said, whoa, wait a minute, back up. Slavery wasn't the main issue. And the name of the book is Human Events. And the whole title is When in the Course of Human Events, which comes from the Declaration. And then the subtitle is Arguing the Case for Southern Secession. And he's saying it was about money. And he goes through here and really points out all the things that Lincoln said about the tariffs and the southern states seceding. And he's saying, how am I going to operate the government without the money? And a little blurb from the back of the book here, it says, Adams' eloquent history transcends simple southern partisanship to show how the Civil War was primarily a battle over competing commercial interests, opposing interpretations of the constitutional rights, and what English novelist Charles Dickens described as a fiscal quarrel. In other words, it's a quarrel over money instead of, this thing about slavery. And Lincoln didn't even say it was about slavery at the start of the war. He didn't even come up with that emancipation and stuff until the war was two years old. It looks like they were losing. He had to latch on to something else to make sure that he kept England and France out of the war on the side of the South. Like France had come in and helped the colonies defeat England. He didn't want either one of those countries to come in and help the South defeat the Yankee Empire. Oh, a couple of other books we're going to talk about. This one was written in 1930, and it is a classic Southern book. It's called I'll Take My Stand, and it's The South and the Agrarian Tradition. And there are 12 Southern authors that wrote this, and they were all either professors or students at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. If you can believe that Vanderbilt at one time was very conservative, people like John Crow Ransom, Donald Davidson, Frank Owsley, Alan Tate, Andrew Nelson Lytle, Robert Penn Warren, Stark Young, and each one of them had a different chapter in that book. And the whole premise of the book was that the South was in too big of a hurry to overthrow their agricultural life and the ties to the land and become industrialized, just like the North was, and everybody run to these cities and be industrialized. And he said, when you're working at a factory, you're just a cog in a machine. That's all you are. You're working for somebody else. And he says, you have no tie to that building or the land. You're just working for your paycheck at the end of the week or end of the month. And he said, if you're tied to the land through agriculture, you're part of the land. You grow the food. You grow the cotton. You grow the cash products, whatever it is.
Blend the soil.
Your roots are in that land right there. And your family cultivated that land, and your grandparents and great-grandparents did. And once you get away from that, you have no tie to this city. I mean, it's just a place to go and work. And one of the things I've read it two or three times, but reread it again during the pandemic, didn't have anything else to do. And they were talking about if all these people rush to these cities and we have another pandemic outbreak like we did the 1919 influenza epidemic, all these people packed in these cities, this thing's going to spread like wildfire. And I thought, how ironic. They were predicting this in 1930, and here it was in 2022 or whatever, 2020 or whatever it was, and all of that's going on again. And just what they were talking about is starting to happen. And I actually got to meet Andrew Nelson Lytle. He came out with a book quite a few years ago, and he was signing at a bookstore over in Green Hills there in Nashville. So I took a copy of the book he had written about forests called Bedford Forrest and His Critter Company, and took it over there and asked him if he would sign it, and he did. And he was the last one of those agrarians to pass away. He was a real young man. I think he was just a student at Vanderbilt when they wrote this I'll Take My Stand book, and then the rest of the 11 of those 12 authors had passed away, and he was the last agrarian that was still alive. So I think those will give our listeners some ideas about some pretty good books to either get from the library, or if you want one on your own, if there's an old bookstore that has copies of older books, and get some factual Southern history. Not this modern stuff that you don't have to bash the South or Lee or Forrest to get your book published. These books will give you factual history, and you can refute a lot of the lies that you have thrown at you.
You did an amazing job, Bitterinder. You really did. And I really loved it. When you came in on the second hour, you did it. I mean, they just meshed together. You did a fantastic job. Frank Hawaii is totally correct. The Bitterinder is a national treasure. I will second and third that. But thank you so much, Gene, for coming on. And thank you so much, Lizzie, for keeping us on track. Thank you, Blood River Radio family. See you, safe time, safe place.